This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rassilon, today, we have the return of BFM's very own and the person I used to work with at Esquire magazine, Sim Weibun.
Hello, hello.
Actually, did I get your name right?
Yeah, Sim Weibun.
Because I always call you Sim.
Yeah, well, everyone calls me Sim.
Everyone calls
it's
you
much
Sim.
More easier. And yeah. So I just go with Sim. Okay. It's like calling someone Lim or Lee.
Okay. So, Sim. And we have first timer. Somebody I've been trying to get for a long time.
Ooh.
She's an actor and a producer, Farah Rani.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
That's great to have you. Yeah. And our three topics this week are topic number one is patience. Topic number two is female-centered...
Female-centric shows.
Female-centric shows, TV and film.
TV.
And finally, topic number three will be, should we even talk about May 13th?
Ooh.
So, Sim, patience.
Yes. So, okay.
So, testing
it's more yes. on kind of like just an observation I've made over the past couple of weeks, starting off with May 9th up to this earlier this week's episode of Game of Thrones, which is like people seem to be very impatient nowadays. You know, people seem to kind of like just. Very quick to criticize, are very quick to tear something apart, are very quick to just be super emotional about it. Take May 9th for an example. It's 1 year of Pakatan Harapan's win in government. It's, you know, after like 60 years of the same government. But what you see on social media is everyone just, well, not everyone. I mean, to give credit, not everyone is like that. But you do see certain and a lot of people kind of like just asking this and demanding this and like, you know, it's been a year and we still don't have that.
And this isn't what I voted for.
Exactly. And I mean, it's not that I'm kind of like belittling the type of activism or type of the things they want. You know, some things are really important, like child marriage and stuff like that after a year and it's still there. It's important. But I think there are way more other stuff like the economy, cost of living and stuff like that. It takes more than a year to fix. And I feel like in the current situation that we operate in, you know, it's not easy, you know. And it's, you know, their new government and stuff like that. You got to give it a chance. But, you know, to take it back to something closer to this week is Game of Thrones. You know, episode 5 came out and, you know, yeah, a lot of people are very unhappy, like very, very, very unhappy to the point that I think there's a petition calling for people to rewrite the entire story and stuff like that. And it... You know, I feel like if you had the you have the patience to sit through the entire 7 seasons, entire 8 seasons, you know, we're one episode away from the ending. Why can't you just hold it on to kind of like make your proper judgment before you cancel something, before you rip something apart?
Yeah.
I get it. I mean, I have my own grouses with the show. One thing's for sure is they themselves need some patience as well because they're going way too fast with the show. But I just think that a lot of the outrage is slightly unwarranted. And yeah, it's just, I don't know why. Well, I don't know why people are just so quick to anger, so
impatient.
You know, yeah.
Okay, as someone who is unhappy with Game of Thrones, so I came into it pretty late. I think I was kind of unemployed for a few months after season 5, season 6. And so I watched it from the beginning. And I was really unhappy because I spent so many hours. It's a lot of hours. It's, what is it, an hour per episode, and it's 50-something episodes altogether?
It's about 70
seasons,
I think 60 episodes.
Yeah, which is load, which is 60 hours of my life, right? And I was just hoping that the ending would justify the build-up.
But it's not over yet. We still have one more episode to go.
No, but we know... We can't give spoilers, no?
Yeah. Well,
what I'm saying is the end for certain characters was just kind of a real letdown. You don't serve the characters you've built well. You don't do them justice by ending it like that. And I know you're right. We have one more episode, but we know how things end for some of these characters. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that I haven't watched Game of Thrones. Mm. I've got nothing against it. And one day, Farah, I will make that investment that you've made. But I kind of see where Sim's coming from because... Good, two different things. The Pakatan impatience and the Game of Thrones impatience are two very different things. But with the Game of Thrones, Sherlock, the BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
So the last season, which is about a year or so ago now, it was one of the episodes came out, the first episode, I think, and I thought, this is terrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. I am so angry. How dare they destroy Sherlock like this for me? I've loved this show so much. Then episode 2 and episode 3 came, and it made absolute sense of that first episode.
Mm.
It built on that. And then as I'm watching it, it's like, oh, this is genius. No, this is genius. It's brilliant. And fortunately, I hadn't been trigger happy on the old Twitter. So
it's funny you mentioned that. So I personally feel that one reason why outrage and impatience is so prevalent now is because people are given the means to be very easily trigger happy. You have Twitter, you have Facebook, you know, so you have YouTube that have clips of, you know, Game of Thrones and whatnot, you know. So there's a platform for people to just air their grouses before kind of like sitting down and thinking about what they're going to say, you know. So I think one of the reasons why we see a lot of that is just how easy it is for some people to say it.
And I've noticed actually, I'm not that comfortable with your categorizing people as them and they. And, you know, Sim, by the way, a lot of people out there who you just... But I would say I have seen very little retracing steps, though. Look, people do say things, and we all say something. But it's so hard to say sorry.
Yeah, I agree.
Or to change your mind.
To change your mind.
Oh, I think I've thought about it and I was wrong.
People do, but it isn't.
It's very rare.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
And but with the Pakatan impatience, though, which I guess is related because, again, we have the Twitter that we can just jump onto. I'm not entirely sure what that is. I guess it's pent-up energy all these years. And now the dam has burst, and it must happen now, because it'll probably return to the old ways pretty soon, and we got to get it fixed now. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you count it in relative sense, like 4 years, 60 years, yes. But then, you know, if you're going to count like the seconds, 4 years is still a long way. There's still a lot that needs to be done, you know. So the way I see it, 1 year really is not enough for you to make a real assessment. And even personally towards the ministers themselves that have come out to rank themselves, I'm like, maybe you should give yourself a bit more time to tell us how you really did good or did bad, you know.
But I think, sorry to interrupt, I think it's quite good to be able to say, hey, I don't agree with this.
Yeah, definitely.
You can chalk it up to impatience, but I think that really adds value to our society, to be able to say, hey, I don't agree with you, or I think you should be doing better.
Yeah, discourse is important. I agree with that.
Is impatience really a bad thing?
I don't know. Yeah, that's why I'm bringing this conversation forward. Is it bad? Because I do acknowledge that impatience drives you to move forward, to do something faster. It pressures. I mean, you're in a group study, you're in a group doing a project, and if you're the impatient one, you tend to, yes, annoy people, but also push people to do something. So it might be good, but it also makes people uncomfortable. It pressures certain people that require time to work. So maybe it's good and bad. I think it's just what issues are you impatient about and what issues you're patient about.
Well, it's just not cool being pro-government anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be impatient right now because I want to be one of the cool kids.
So you want to be pro-opposition?
No, I don't know. No, I want it now. Whatever it is, I want it now. And speaking of which, topic number two. And Farah Rani, the first person ever on A Bit of Culture to say, sorry to interrupt you.
I blame my parents for that.
What do those words mean? So, Farah, female-centric content.
Yeah, I'm really excited because I just finished watching Tuca and Bertie. Have you guys watched that? It's on Netflix. It's this new animated show by Lisa, I can't remember, Hannawalt, I think is how you pronounce her last name.
Is that American? Or?
Yeah, it's American, but it's about two birds. It's an animated show about two birds.
Oh, I saw the promo.
Yeah, it's really great. It's this two birds who are in their 30s and they're kind of navigating life. They're best friends. They're both really different. One is voiced by Ali Wong, the stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And the other is voiced by Tiffany Haddish. Mm. So Ali Wong's character is a bird, is a sensible, responsible, and Tiffany Haddish's character is a bit more larger than life, right? And is 6 months sober when the show starts. It's a great show. It really is amazing at depicting female friendships. And I love that they're birds because you don't think about their race. It's universal and just really marvelous how they kind of hit the nail on the head with that dynamic. And it's really absurd and goofy and random and quirky, but it talks about real issues like sexual harassment, commitment issues, alcoholism, real things that women deal with around the world.
And it feels rare?
It feels rare. Of course, yeah, absolutely it feels rare. Yeah. Well, I can't think of anything else that's like that.
Sex in the City?
I feel like Sex in the City was, I mean, there were four people who lived in like Midtown Manhattan, barely worked, you know?
Privilege,
white people. I mean, I learned a lot from Sex and the City. I think I learned a lot about sex from Sex and the City.
I agree, rare, but I think that there is a growing movement, though. You know, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
The new show Dead to Me is also really
good. Yeah, I just caught episode one earlier this week. It was a recommendation. My colleague who told me to watch it said that it's funny, it's dark, it's great, and it's like it's about middle-aged women as well, not young, not college women. So I saw episode one. The build-up was all right, but that ending for episode one, I'm hooked, and I'm like, I'm binging it this weekend.
Yeah, it was really completely unexpected, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on? Yeah. And then that happens. Yeah. But I need to know now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I got my patience.
But
you've got no patience.
But I do agree. How you described the first one about the birds, I think the fact that it's animated as well, it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
But Farah, you and Charmaine Othman, who's also been a guest on the show many times, the two of you and
Sherry Al-Haddad
have produced
a super telly movie for Astro First called Geng, G-E-N-G.
Which is coming out fairly soon.
Which is coming out in July.
And that was made with the intention of being...
Yes, absolutely. So after watching Dead to Me and after watching Tuca and Bertie, I was thinking, well, I haven't seen any Malaysian things like this. So I was thinking about, well, what Malaysian thing has like depicted female friendships?
Three R
was more like a talk show, a variety show, right? Like what fictional show does that in a Malaysian context? And I couldn't really think of anything except for this show called Cinta Seratus KG, which is now on Netflix. So it stars Sherry Al-Haddad and Sharif Armani as best friends. And I haven't really seen the whole thing, but I've seen a few episodes. And I think I'm in a few episodes, actually. I play like a receptionist or something.
Oh, actually, a long time ago, Charmaine's father produced a sitcom series, Gadistigo, which I actually wrote part of, which was about female gang.
That's great.
And... I can't remember what it was like. It was a long time ago. But so I suppose once in a blue moon something pops up.
Yeah. So I was wondering about this, right? Like, why don't people watch female-centric things, female-driven something or other?
Because there's not many of them out there, I think. Yeah.
Yes, but why isn't there many? So I was looking at the box office takings, and like this is the history of Malaysia, right? The first five are all male movies. The highest grossing film is Munafik 2, 48 million. Followed by Hantu Kat Lima 3, 36 million. And then Pascal, 30 million. And then Upin and Ipin, 25 million. And then Polisi Vot 2. But the closest thing is Ombak Rindu, which is 14. And that made 10 million. And Ombak Rindu is the opposite of what we want to see women represented.
So there's an absence of female-centric content. So therefore, all the other stuff becomes top of the charts.
Yeah.
But if you go across to Korea, where they make a lot of movies, so much of it is made for the female audience. If you go think of the old Hong Kong movies, so much of that was made for the female audience.
Yeah.
Women read books more than men, so they're paying money there. Young girls are the ones who are paying money for all the pop bands, etc., that break into the world.
Yeah.
And I think women actually still make up the largest proportion of cinema goers. I'm not sure about the last part, but they are not being given any content.
Yeah.
You're right. Even with superhero movies as well, you know, for the longest time, it's always been like a male superhero or a team of male superheroes. You know?
Yeah.
Only recently with stuff like Wonder Woman,
Captain Marvel,
has it been proven that only people in Hollywood, large, right? Wow, we can actually make money from this, and this is like how many decades? Toys as well. Yeah.
Yeah, but those women, they bash people up.
Well, oh, you mean it's an action, genre-wise? Yeah. There are
I'm just talking about the representation.
But still the representation, mm. but they're still beating people up, which I find, I don't know, it's odd.
Yeah. I mean, women can beat people up, that's not all. I mean, the thing is, if you have that one kind of movie, then okay, women are either the bitch bosses or, you know, the woman raped, like in Umbaru, right? Like, that's not all women. It's a variety. We can't just place one woman, women as like one thing.
So with Geng, what was your intention? What do you want to do?
We wanted to make a movie about women. To kind of show people. Well,
reflect
who we are and the different kinds of women, right? So the three main characters played by Lisa Suriani, Nadia Nisa and Cheryl Hadet, they're best friends-ish, but they're very different women with very different circumstances. And we so rarely see that. And we so rarely see female friendships. And we so rarely see women who are powerful and yet vulnerable and go through what men go through generally in TV and film, you know?
Well, we have to move on in a moment. Can I just want to ask one last question?
Sure.
So with female-centric or even maybe more particularly female-generated content, is there a different rhythm? Is there a different direction, a different structure? You mentioned, for instance, with the birds, the toucan thing. It doesn't sound plot-heavy, as far as I can understand.
Yes, it is. It's very plot-heavy.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
So I feel like the rules don't change. You're still trying to tell a good story.
Right.
But now we're showing women as lead characters, as not just the girlfriend or the spurned ex-lover or the rape victim you know.
Well, it's funny because Korean society is supposed to be incredibly sexist.
Well, I mean,
but the amount of content that they create is for women is enormous.
In terms of sitcom, the one I can think of that I've actually watched is Two Broke Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, you know, two girls, they're friends, you know, and one kind of like came from privilege and she's, you know, now she has to work as a waitress and they're both like, you know, they're not like typecast as a victim or someone's ex. They had boyfriends and stuff, but, you know, they're a lead in a funny kind of like sitcom and it's also about their struggles and, you know, so it's nice. And but amongst the sea of other sitcoms, it is very hard to find like a fully kind of like female focus. The female takes the lead.
Yeah.
And usually they're really good ones, or like they have to be produced by a women producer, a men producer. Like men won't take the initiative. Most men won't take the initiative to kind of like pitch and do a show like that.
No,
I feel.
No, sure.
Yeah. Also, like, sorry, Cam.
Oh my but God. What's going on? Like,
it makes such a difference when a woman is writing it or the woman is a showrunner talking about women. Because I think in the past, there have been a lot of shows that are for women but written by men.
Yeah.
And they're so unrecognizable and so like weird and horrible, their depiction of women. Yeah,
Well, sorry to interrupt you, Sarah. but we'll move on. After the break, in a moment, we're going to be talking about, well, something called May 13th.
Oh.
You know, kids, ask your grandparents. Here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Sim Wei Boon, and Farah Rani. And now, topic number three. Just recently, we went past a date in the calendar called May 13th. And just so happens, 50 years ago in Kuala Lumpur, May 13th is a date about which I think most Malaysians know. Something very, very bad happened in the heart of Kuala Lumpur. Quite a lot of people were killed. The official figures are, I think, 149. As some estimates go up to 800, but there are very unconfirmed estimates. Just rumors that are going up to 2,000. But I think we can probably ignore those. But my topic for this is not about May 13th per se, about the nitty-gritty of what actually happened. But I want to ask, should we even talk about it? I mentioned in the preamble about the numbers who died. So I don't really want to concentrate on the specific events, but I just want to ask, should we even talk about it? For people of my generation and people, my parents' generation, it was just this thing that people did not talk about. And I remember my aunts if ever it vaguely came up in conversation, it would just be, oh, no, we don't talk about that. And so I just thought there was just this thing, May 13th, that just something horrible happened. That it was like a Pandora's box. All the sins of Malaysia, the worst aspects of Malaysians, was put in that box. And you must never open that box. Otherwise, the evil of the four winds would come out and consume the nation. And younger people, though, and I would include both of you. Why not?
Thanks.
You know, greater and greater distance. I was alive when it happened. I was 3 years old. But there are people who, I mean, like, you know, you who were not alive. So, I don't know. I can't really say we should necessarily talk about it, because it does expose ugly happenings, and I wouldn't want to dwell upon those or to encourage people to emulate those or feel that they are defined by those. Be if they are Malay or Chinese people, to read that and go, well, this must be what Malay people do. I am Malay, therefore. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily the conclusion or consequence of talking about it. I think it's important to talk about it because there's such a distance between my generation and what happened in on May 13th. And it's not just about talking about the event, but like why it happened. Mm-hmm. What led to this horrific thing happening. And can I ask, Cam, why do you think people from your generation, your parents' generation, refuse to talk about it?
Shame.
Shame?
Fear. I think one of the legacies, the enduring legacies, of not talking about it, of it happening and then not talking about it, is that it portrays the Malays as being just a crazy people.
Mm.
That you prod them and they just burst out into violence. And I think that was one of the things that my family were fearful of. They didn't subscribe to that themselves, but it was like, we don't want to encourage that. And it was just
we don't encourage the perpetuating this stereotype.
And also just, it was just such a horrible thing that people don't want to think that could happen here.
But it did happen.
It did happen here. And so better to ignore it than say,
then accept or embrace the shame. And
I think it's important. For me, it's how and why you're talking about it. You know, it's a lot in the context, right?
Mm.
So how is it in, like, are you talking about it? Like, are we kind of like sitting down, having coffee and talking about it on May 13th? Like, hey, so this happened a few decades ago. Or is it a public forum where you have people talking about the implications, what led to it? Or is it an education, like in the history books or something like that? And why you're talking about it as well? Are you talking to educate? Are you talking to analyze? Because if you're talking to slander and cause chaos, then you shouldn't talk about it.
Or fearmonger.
Exactly. Yeah. You shouldn't. Yeah. But if you're talking to kind of like, I think one of the privilege, I guess, for my generation is we weren't there when that happened. So emotionally, we are kind of detached from it because we're not there when the news headlines flooded our pages and when like emergency was declared and stuff like that. We just read about it. We heard about it. So we kind of have, like, for me, like, there's a sense of emotional attachment. Like, I don't swell up in tears with flashbacks of it because I don't have flashbacks of it. So what that lets me do is look at the situation and see, like, so what led to this?
Mm.
Like, so why did this happen?
Mm.
And that teaches me to kind of like recognize, like, in my time, like in last, I think one of the fears that was being perpetuated around during GE14 was that fear of like kind of May 13 repeating itself. And you had politicians that were saying stuff like that. See, that's an example of...
Do you want to take the sting out of that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've read about it. I know, like, okay, this was the context that it happened. Mm. So I know that it won't happen again. So long as we don't, like, do this, so long as we don't prod, we don't provoke. And, you know, so it's important. It's history. And you cannot forget history. You cannot not talk about history.
I just worry that if we don't talk about it, then it'll kind of get forgotten.
And repeat itself.
And repeat itself.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, but I agree with Sim, though, that... sorry to interrupt you.
No.
I agree with Sim that for me, the important and interesting thing is, why did it happen?
Mm-hmm.
yes, it's horrifying and it's grisly and it's exciting almost to read about what happened, but it's the why it happened. And I think a lot of those things are things that we actually cannot talk about because we have been unable to get the official documents that would provide us with the information enough to understand why it happened, and that it is quite possible that it was a political job.
Those are the theories that were being touted.
But I can't even go beyond that because I could not possibly prove that either way because I can't get the documents.
So are you asking if we should be allowed to see that document?
Oh, for sure. But there are still people alive today who
have knowledge
and we're involved in. So in some circumstances, it'd be better if we wait long enough for these people to have
patience.
Patience. And then to be able to understand the whys and wherefores. And I think that also one of the things, another aspect is that Kuala Lumpur was the capital city of Malaysia, but it was just a small town. And a few years before, you'd had its fusion with Sabah and Sarawak. And it now became the capital city of a mighty nation. It had only just been the capital of the Federated Malay States before that. But running the Federated Malay States really took a desk and an office, and that was it. So this place was not built to become a capital city of a nation, literally not built. So you suddenly had all these people moving into this town, Malay people especially, and that one place that they could fit into were allowed, not allowed, but the place they could afford to be in downtown was Kampong Bahru. Right? And the rest of the town was Chinese. So I'm not pointing any fingers at Chinese, that's right. But it was just a moment in time when a capital city needed to emerge and it wasn't built as such. So demographic pressures were also involved. And so I think the reasons, that's what interests me. And I would not wish people to read down. I'm talking a lot here, but can I just finish one story? Mm. When I was at school in England, we were taught about this massacre at Glencoe in Scotland, 1692, when the MacDonalds were attacked by the Campbells and 30 of them were killed. It's a famous story. And it just so happened that one of my schoolmates, his name was Campbell. So the kids in the class started bullying that guy because they called him a murderer.
Aww.
The Campbells died in 1692, and he became the animus of a bunch of 10-year-olds. And, you can't legislate against that. You can't police against that.
You have to educate that. The teacher needs to tell the students that it's wrong. The parents need to step up and tell them that it's wrong.
Can you guarantee that?
There's no guarantee of that. I mean, if that's the case, then we shouldn't talk about anything at all that would divide a nation, that would divide a people. We shouldn't talk about men and women being different.
Yeah.
Because differences are what gives us identity and gives us uniqueness. And a lot of times, there's a lot of negative aspects that comes with differences. But I believe that if there was good discourse, good conversations, good upbringing, you can kind of like get out of that, you know? Like, May 13 shouldn't be a taboo subject because look at it this way, okay? Yes, you say we can't talk about it, but those that want to use it as a vehicle for negativity will use it nonetheless because, you know, they don't respect law or whatever. They're just going to use it to kind of like perpetuate hate and negativity.
Sure.
So I'm not saying kind of like use it as a tool for positivity or anything. Keep it neutral. Keep it black and white. Make sure that you don't have to force a conversation for it. But when a conversation happens, make sure that it's a structured, well thought out, kind of like a good conversation that you can learn or you realize something from it, mm-hmm. rather than just kind of like a weapon for someone to kind of use to perpetuate hate and misunderstanding.
Okay. Farah?
So I'm reading Hannah Alkaff's The Weight of Our Sky, which is great. It's got a great premise. It's about a teenage girl who has OCD, and it's written from her perspective, and it's about May 13th. And prior to reading that book, I thought May 13th was just a day. Mm. I didn't know that there were weeks and weeks where they were, well, maybe not weeks, but days, where people were apart from their families. And I think it's really important because I didn't know these things. I wasn't taught. I didn't know. I mean, I had a vague idea of how it happened, but this book is well-researched. And I know a lot more reading this book. than I was ever taught. And it's just given me perspective, not just about May 13th, but about our country.
You'd like nuance and kind of the things that you can't just kind of like expect from someone. You got to, you know, pick it up. These tiny little details that you're going to pick it up.
Mm. So sure, it's fiction, this book, but it's based on real events.
Yeah.
And I think it's valuable to know.
Okay. Well, we must move on. But I just want to conclude with one thing that we must bear in mind with May 13th, that on the date that happened, 99.9999% of the rest of the country, nothing happened.
Yeah.
And that also in 99.999% recurring of the rest of Malayan stroke Malaysian history, it hasn't happened. So the events of May 13th are an anomaly.
Could you put it up to like everything was just in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah, could be.
But I don't think that means we shouldn't talk about it.
Oh no, I agree. Yeah. I am. Not
young
just
people are very curious.
I'm not just
very curious.
I'm not just persuaded by your arguments. I am, it's a generational thing. So we must move on. And we move on to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think would be of interest, and Sim goes first.
Okay, so do you use Twitter? Do you guys use Twitter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
So I follow a Twitter page on Twitter. It's called 41 Strange. There is actually a book by two writers. I think they're writers for Penny Dreadful and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a compilation of 41 strange horror short stories published like in 2014. I'm trying to get a book. I can't get a book online. I can't find it. But why I highlight the Twitter account is because they post photos and followed by little tiny factoids, and it's really, really cool photos of like, it can be anywhere between like kind of like scenes in a movie, behind the scenes of a horror movie, to weird animals like a leaf insect or like a kind of deep sea fish, and they accompanied with like really cool factoids about like where does this animal come from and stuff like, and they even post up photos of like really cool art and really cool sculptures. So it's nice because, you know, I follow a lot of news reports online on Twitter, and I read a lot of news, and given the global headlines, they're usually quite depressing. It's nice to see something really interesting, really odd, accompanied by cool facts, just to kind of like, oh, okay, that's really cool. And more than often, it kind of like leads me to reading more about it, and it just, I think it's really cool.
Okay, so that's 21?
41 Strange.
41 Strange. Yeah. That sounds great.
Right. And they have like cute cat videos as well. So
oh well, then you got me then. I got no patience. I'm gonna read it now. So okay, so 41 Strange and Farah.
Okay, I'm gonna recommend an old HBO show called The Comeback. Have you guys seen it?
I don't know.
It's pretty. I mean, I've only recently rewatched it because Lisa Kudrow is a genius in it.
Oh,
she plays. Okay. She plays Valerie Cherish. Someone who had an actress who had a big show in the 90s and is now doing a reality TV show of her comeback. And it's just really great. It's really great writing and she's really good.
Is this a while ago? Or?
It's a while ago, yeah. So right. They did the first season, I think in 2005 or something. And then 9 years later, they did the second season.
Oh, wow.
Which is really, so it's just it's so brilliant. She's so brilliant. The writing's brilliant. Please watch it. You can watch it on HBO Go. I think if you have Astro Go, you can watch it there.
Yeah, okay. Or other ways.
Or other ways, which I
will. Right. Okay, and so again, The Comeback.
The Comeback, yeah.
Okay, cool. So my recommendation is Malaysia Kini website, mm-hmm. the news portal. They've done a very good interactive map and an analysis of the events of May 13th. And also looking at the build up to it, or the analyzing the reasons behind, as best they can, and it's very soberly done. It's very honestly done. They don't hide the numbers.
Yeah, it's very cool. They even have like an interactive map.
Yeah.
You know, when you click on
that's great.
They kind of like have accounts of like, you know, like Achong or something like that and stuff like it's really cool. It kind of like, it really is like reading a book, and it puts you kind of like there because of the interactivity of it, and some of the kind of like clicks leads you to like another story which is more well written or more kind of like deep analysis. That it was really cool.
Yeah. Really cool.
And yeah. I think it was like a project that they've been working on it for months.
Months and months. And it's a really good response to an incredibly important moment in the country's history. So Moshe Kinney's May 13th interactive map stroke analysis. That's my recommendation. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. And it only remains for me now to thank Simwe Boone.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And special honored guest.
Special honored guest. Stop. It's been lovely. Thank you so much.
Farah Rani. And so you don't know when your air date is for...
No, we don't know yet. But sometime in July, I think. Yeah.
And we should look out for... What's it called?
Gang. G-E-N-G.
And...
At Astrofest.
And myself, Cam Raslan. And so please like our Facebook page because, you know, it's special, interactive. You press things and,
and you learn. You can hear sounds when you press it.
And you learn something.
So you don't need patience for that, right?
It's no.
Immediate gratification.
Instant gratification. Instant gratification. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.